back out of the Rays now that they play outdoors? Red Sox are contenders, Yankees, Rays. Like, that's meaningful. You had that hang-up with that stadium. They're playing outdoors. Rain delays. The Yankees did something last night. I sat down to watch. The game started late. But when they do what they did last night, they lose me quick. And that is hit three straight first-inning home runs. I'm out. I want to see him suffer. I'm out.
Nine home runs last night.
Didn't even know that.
Second time this year. And did they not? Maybe Sal knows this, or maybe you do. Are they the only team now in history, not just in one season, but that's ever had 2 9 home run games? I think I read that. I think it's certainly the first time it's ever happened in one year, but I think no one else has more than 1 9 home run game.
Nine seems like you're just showing off.
I believe that's correct. I saw something like this.
Yeah.
Yankees become first MLB team to hit 9 home runs in a game twice. That's correct.
Have they ever considered whether that's good for ratings?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, Mike, you say what you say, but it does not get me to tune out. In fact, I'll be honest. Last night, I was ready to watch the game. I saw it was a rain delay. I'm like, wow, shoot. By the time that it was about to start, it was time for Hard Knocks. Did Hard Knocks, and then Matt Bove and I had a reaction podcast right after Hard Knocks. That was over, and I'm like, oh, let me see how the Yankees are doing, because I think they must have started by now. I look at the score. It's 10-2 with 7 home runs in the fourth, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Unbelievable. I didn't see any of it until I watched the highlights.
Would you go back and – yeah, you'd watch the highlights. You're the fan that would watch. You'd want to see that. Yeah.
I wanted to see all those home runs, for sure. It made me feel good. I mean, they need all the wins they can get right now. And, you know, hey, Blue Jays lost today, so Yanks have a chance to creep within 4. I mean, you know, there's still 6 weeks left. You never know. The Yanks had a big lead. They lost it. They have the Red Sox coming up for a big series. So, you know, the way they're playing now, I guess that I'm invested again.
Don't go ignoring the Red Sox in between there. The Red Sox are still in second, are they not?
No.
That changed.
There are a couple games behind the Yankees now.
I didn't know that changed. Holy cow.
Yeah, they lost to Baltimore twice.
Oh,
Yankees and Red Sox this weekend. Oh, Blue Jays are in Miami. So you got that. Sal, what are the reviews to you that you're hearing on Hard Knocks? Bulldog and I were talking about it. He's watching it, and he thinks the show is sort of not as interesting or maybe at least controversial as it's been.
Oh, 100% that's right. I think it's exactly what the Bills want, right? I mean, it's what you aim for if you're any NFL team. You want to keep all of the controversy, drama, whatever word you want to use out of it, and say just focus on, you know, the cool storylines and good PR for the team. And you're going to have some cool moments and people are like, oh, that was kind of interesting, right? A couple of guys, you know, going at it again with the Chicago Bears, right? You know, a coach, you know, swearing at his guys because they didn't do something right. But man, this has been from a Hard Knock standpoint, I think it's been as vanilla as you can get, and I think that's exactly how the Bills
are. Sure. I wonder how HBO feels about it. I wonder what sort of reviews it's getting from people that aren't Bills fans. Because, I mean, I'm a Bills fan. I'm enjoying watching the show, but it feels very much like a show they could have produced themselves with their embedded series, you know? So I wonder if viewership takes a hit, and I have no idea if it will or if it is, but if HBO will find the whole thing worth continuing to do. Because it's a fight to get a team to want to do it. Teams are exerting control over it. And this sort of happened to the NHL Road to the Winter Classic series. The first couple of those were excellent. And then they got sort of, the teeth got taken out of it. And it still was, you know, for a super hockey fan like me, worth watching. But it was not as interesting unless you're a fan of the team that's being featured.
I think most fans, most people watching would share that sentiment, what you said, and how we felt about it. In fact, I think one of the ways to judge that is we are not seeing anyone actually talk about it or hearing or seeing tweets about it, right? Like the Giants Hard Knocks was, oh my God, every single time you turned around, there was something people were talking about in this big storyline in national media. I mean, we really don't get that at all. For locally, the fans, the Bills fans, Matt and I do the podcast, and you know, there's running comments. This is right after the show. There's running comments, And I think it's pretty much the same, but there are a lot of people going, hey, I've never really watched it, but since the Bills are on, I've watched it. I really like this kind of stuff. And I think that's cool. It's a it is really good insight for a lot of fans who don't normally get the insight and they want to see it. And especially if you've never watched Hard Knocks and you don't really understand what it's about and you're seeing things that maybe you didn't understand what you would see. And that's really cool for you. I also think last night was the best episode of the three, to be quite honest. Like I thought last night they got in, now that they're back home out of St. John Fisher, they got a little bit more into the, you know, personal storylines and the coaches together and all those things. I liked last night's episode the best.
I agree. Of the three, it was my favorite. My favorite moment from last night's episode was the footage of Andreessen picking off a ball in the end zone in a practice in Orchard Park. This wasn't a part of the Chicago thing. And getting up, like he would have been down, but he got up and just ran all the way to the other end zone with the ball. And who chased him and punched it out but Allen? Like, I just thought that was such a funny moment that, like, you've got, you know, the local guy, like a feel good story, and but he's, you know, he's an undrafted, and the $300 million quarterback is the guy chasing him, just to, like, even though this isn't a real thing, I'm coming for you. And I just thought that was really, really cool.
I remember the day, I remember the play, standing there watching it, and when this happened on Hard Knocks, I turned to Jana and Max and I said, oh, watch this. Josh is going to go get him. Like, I knew it was going to happen, right?
Yeah, right.
And I didn't know if they're going to show the whole thing, but since they started showing that, you figured, you know, that would happen. I think maybe my favorite was Ed Oliver and Ty Johnson on the horse and seeing Ty Johnson at the end, like, oh my God, he's going to fall. No, he's not going to fall. Right. That was pretty cool for me. And of course, I just think that the football stuff, the meetings and seeing McDermott talk to his guys about reps and what they mean and highlighting Jimmy Charlo, and nobody had him on their bingo card. I don't think being highlighted in Hard Knocks. Right. And I think that was really cool. Just kind of what they're all about when they're in that setting and they're showing these guys to each other, to their teammates, and highlighting and saying, okay, guess what? You get more reps now because of this.
Well, I very much look forward to in 4 years watching all of this after school in syndication on Channel 29. I think that'll be really fun. It'll be nostalgic at that point. Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Sal, what was the lead story of the day?
The lead story might have been the fact that this guy, Grant Dubose, who just signed with the Bills like yesterday, wide receiver, he got carted off. He got carted off the practice field. And it's just like, I say it like that because it's like, oh my gosh, not sure what this guy really is supposed to do, because last year he had a really major concussion while playing with the Miami Dolphins. He was in the hospital and, you know, he's back playing football again. He's trying to make his way back to the league and suddenly he signs with the Buffalo Bills and literally like the next day he's in a one-on-one drill and he goes to the ground and he hurts his shoulder or collarbone or something, and the card has to come out. I think that was a lead story today. I think Deion Dawkins talking about Keon Coleman was really interesting, and this is on the heels of Josh Allen, his talking about Keon's maturation, and then Deion talking about Keon and saying it is night and day between last year and this year and the way that he's handling things. And he said the league better get ready for Keon, like, because he sees such a difference and sees and believes what he's going to be, and that starts this year.
Pretty big words.
Yeah, those are big words. And Brady also, the coordinator, talked about Keon and even used your word from, like, I don't know, what was that, like 3 weeks ago when I asked you what looks different about Coleman from year one to year two, and you used intentional in his route running, right?
I did. I think it's wild, right? It's true. You asked me this. We had this discussion. You said to me, you know, what do you think is different, if anything, about Keon? And I paused. I said, I don't know. I'm trying to find the word for it. I said, I think the word I would use is intentional. He's been very intentional about everything he's done. I watch him and I can tell he's thinking about where to be at the top of the route, how to set up his feet, how to do everything. Everything seems really intentional. Well, that was, like you said, Bulldog, like maybe 3 weeks ago. Mike, you were off. Joe Brady goes to the podium today and he's talking about Keon Coleman and he starts talking and then suddenly he says, I think everything he's doing is very intentional and his intentionality. And I'm like, oh my God, like, this is literally the word that I use with Bulldog. I texted Bulldog and said, was he listening to WGR and he got that word? Because that's pretty cool that he just did this.
Right.
You know, Brady in these press conferences is very, I want to say, safe. Not that that's always bad or anything. We've spent a couple days recently parsing Sean McDermott's comments. Well, he seems a little bit critical here. What is he going for? Or is he just being honest? Brady is different. than that. Today he said, I love where our receivers, or wideouts rather, I love where our wideouts are right now. And, you know, is that a little much, Sal, or no? Like, Shakir isn't on the field. What is he getting out? Samuel's been hurt. Coleman, okay. What is he getting out of most everybody else?
And most of the context there was, he was asked specifically about Sean's comments that he really, that there's a top three, right, that we all know. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you know, we'll see who falls in and where they fall. And Joe backed it up with, well, I'm comfortable and I like where all the wideouts are. He said 1 through 8 is what he said.
Right.
And I counted. There's more than 8 on the roster, right? But he said 1 through 8, I believe, is what he did. And yep. I think we could guess that Chenault and Hamler fall in there, maybe Wilkerson, whatever. But they're all right there. So that's what he, and then he went on to say, because they all have different skill sets and they all complement each other. But you're right, Mike. Like, that's how Joe Brady talks. Joe Brady is very general. He even said at one point there was a specific question about something, and he said, well, I don't want to get into specifics, but as a group or as a team, and he went into that. Now, I know you didn't ask me about Bobby Babich, but let's contrast that with Bobby Babich. Bobby Babich gets a lot more specific. I think Bobby Babich, in my time covering this team, he might be the best coach to listen to I've ever sat down with and heard at a podium and just listened to him and asked questions and got really good, thoughtful responses on the questions that you ask. I think he's amazing at doing that.
Interesting.
And today, can I give you one today?
Sure.
And I haven't gone back. I have to go back and do the transcript. So I asked Bobby Babich today. And this is just a great example of what I mean. I said, Bobby, over the last 20 years, we've seen kind of there's no more free and strong safety. That's gone away. But you still have to probably evaluate and as a defensive coordinator have a philosophy of how you want your safeties to play in the box or free, and they're going to have different skill sets. How do you go about that philosophically? And he right away said, all right, a safety position question. I love this. And then he says to me, who would you have said is the strong safety between Micah and Jordan? So I'll ask you guys, who would you have said?
I would say Micah was the free safety, Poyer was the strong safety, mostly because Poyer's shoulder pads looked bigger.
I would have said the same names without that reason in mind.
Well, I wanted to answer that way and thought, why do I want to answer that way? And I'm admitting that it's because Poyer's shoulder pads looked bigger.
I answered the same way. I said, I would say Jordan. He said, good. He said, now, he said there's a perception of where guys play and free and strong. But what we went on to say was Jordan was excellent in the box. He was also really good playing center field. Micah was excellent playing center field. He was also really good in the box. So, yes, that's correct. If you want to just kind of put them in that box, so to speak. But they played off each other so well. So then he went into that a little bit. He even talked about the 85 Bears. He came from that system. He talked about the 46 defense, why it's called the 46, because Doug Plank wore number 46, not because of an alignment, right? And because when Doug Plank went from the safety spot into the box, they called it 46 because they were moving him to a different spot on the field. He talked about that a little bit. And then I followed it up by saying, okay, so when you're evaluating your safety, this is, by the way, all on the heels of Cole Bishop. This is why we're talking about this. And I said, so when you're evaluating a safety, what are you looking for then? Like, what's the most important trait? Because you're saying you can't do everything great, but you still want to have these abilities. He said the most important thing for them is to play in space. This game is a game of space now. So you're talking 53 and a third yards wide of a football field. Those guys have to be able to cover all of that. I just thought it was awesome and interesting.
I love it. I appreciate the enthusiasm in your voice. The Dolphins did the same thing, by the way. The 53 was for Bob Matheson, the linebacker that they would use. And
yeah.
It was because of his jersey number.
Am I remembering this incorrectly, that Keith McKellar was the reason the K-Gun was called the K-Gun, not Kelly? Like, you'd see right. K-Gun offense and think the quarterback's name begins with K, therefore that's it. But it was sneakily, you know, there's a capital K in McKellar's name, right? M, little C, big K. That was the K for K-Gun. That's a little bit like this. That's kind of cool about it. I'd never heard that about the Bears.
Yeah, so that's why they're called the 46 defense. It had nothing to do with alignment. There's no 4-6 in there. It's the jersey number. And yes, Keith McKellar. But I really liked him. And he Bobby Babich did talk about Cole Bishop today. And I was very encouraged by what he said, which is he did say that Terrell Bernard and Cole Bishop are good comparisons, someone asked, because at the end of going into the second year with Terrell Bernard, there were a lot of questions and about, you know, where is this? Where are we going with middle linebacker? Is he really the guy? There's a lot of work to do. And he said that's actually a fair comparison. And he even said Cole has made progress here since he's been on the field. It's delayed progress, but he really does like the progress that's happening.
Yeah, I want to compliment Sneaky Joe from our morning show, Joe DiBiase with Jeremy White. Mornings here. Joe dug up a quote from McDermott because we talked with you and on our show quite a bit yesterday about McDermott, his tone, his word choices, and like what's he going for here, as I can't remember a time where he sounded like this late in the summer, uncertainty. And Joe had a quote. It's not exactly what he said about Bishop the other day, but it was close enough about Bernard. Like, we don't know, you know, we're not getting what we need here, or something to that effect about Bernard. And of course, we know he got on the field and was, you know, excellent almost right from the start, even though he missed all of the summer.
That's right. And I believe, and I will just give the credit to Uber Hansen on Twitter, who I think actually is the one who put the quote out where Joe found it. So give him credit here.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Uber Hansen, who found three different reporters almost exactly 2 years ago, August 17th of 2023, John Scott, Matty Glab, and Joe Biscaglia all quoting. And basically the quote was, when it comes to the starting middle linebacker job, he said, there's room for improvement, McDermott. That's an area of concern right now. That's exactly what he said.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. Did I read that Dalton Kincaid took a hit today?
He's going over the middle. Taylor Rapp came up to make a play on the ball. They collided. Dalton was down for a brief second. He was a little slow to get up. He did get up. He walked over to the sideline. It was towards the end of practice. I watched him closely. He was going to go in. Like, he had his helmet. He wanted to go in the huddle. And then someone else went in, so he didn't go in. So, yes, technically, like, that is correct. He didn't take another team rep. I also watched him walk into the locker room just like normal, like, you know, along with Dawson Knox. He seems fine.
What's your answer to a question we were discussing about James Cook earlier, whether or not, I wouldn't want to put it to you as in, like, that his new contract, his more secured future with the Bills would mean that necessarily, because of that, he would play more than his league-low 44% of the snaps among running backs who had at least more than, rather, 200 carries last year. Do you think that that's in the cards for him, for one reason or another?
I don't. I mean, it could be. The only way would be because of injury and you're not as comfortable having someone else carry the ball as much, maybe behind him. But I look what they have in that running back room, and that's James Cook, that's Ray Davis, that's Ty Johnson. I think Ty Johnson is an excellent third down back. Josh Allen called him the best third down back in the league. They're going to use him on third downs. I don't think that even if James Cook improves on third down, you might see an uptick there. I don't see it's going to be so drastic that we're going to be talking about this huge snap count increase. So, no, I think James Cook, where he's been, where he was last year, is exactly where they want to be, and that's why they paid him. Let's pay him this money. Let's keep doing what we're doing with him because it works.
When you were on the field for Bills-Bears, did you watch Tyson Bagent play and think this guy ought to get a $10 million extension within a couple of days? Because that's what happened.
No, but I remember watching him in preseason a couple of years ago, I think it was. I remember watching him another game, or maybe it was the cold game that the Bills played in Chicago, mm-hmm. one or the other, but and thinking, boy, this guy's got some moxie. Like, he just, like, I really liked him. Like, that the fact that he was out there trying to ball, right, and do everything he could to make plays. Certainly did not think that he'd be signing a pretty decent size extension. I guess you call it decent size, but, you know, in this day and age of quarterbacks, you're paying Justin Fields what you're paying him as a number one pick, but it is on a rookie contract, so I guess you could wash that a little bit by paying your backup a little bit.
There are clips of him at a press conference reacting to this contract, and he's in tears. He said his father didn't have running water as a child, and he played, Warren Sharp has that he played D2 football in West Virginia, like a very modest amateur career. And now, I mean, this is pretty good.
Shepherd University, I believe.
The Shepherd Rams. I don't know anything about them.
It's an easy guy to root for.
Yeah.
That's, no doubt. That's all there is to it.
At $10 million, I mean, there are a lot of ways to parse these contracts, but watch out, Caleb Williams, after that, like, second pick. Here come the masses. Look out.
Footsteps.
He paints his nails.
Yeah.
Pageant wants it more.
Nobody defended him when Joey Bosa knocked him over at practice on Friday, right, Sal?
Yeah, did you see the there was a clip of that on Hard Knocks.
There was, yeah.
And it wasn't that hard, as hard as I thought.
I know.
But he did get him kind of up in the, a little bit more in the neck area than I thought.
Yeah. Anything that we're missing here? There were some roster machinations here, but anything else that we need to know about? Anything really notable?
I think the Gabe Davis visit is notable, right?
Okay, right.
Yeah, that's something that reportedly is today happening. And I just, I'll go back to what I said yesterday, which is, to me, this is all about doing your due diligence on where he is health-wise. Gabe Davis was released in May with an injury designation. He's been rehabbing the last few months, and the reason why he hasn't signed yet is partly because he hasn't been fully healthy, but also on his own accord. Why go sign with a team when there's a 90-man roster and everybody's sharing the weight room and the training room when you can go do your own thing? Which, by the way, he owns his own rehab facility and training center, I should say, in Orlando. Get healthy, get as healthy as you can, and then go show teams what you can do right around cuts time. That's now. You see what he is health-wise, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, wherever he's going to go here. And then, to me, it's, okay, we see where he is. Now, if you think that he can help your team and be healthy, what happens the next 6 days before cuts? Does something else shake free that you like more? Is it Gabe that you want? Do you want to do that before cuts because then you get ahead of it, or do you just wait on it? So I think that's where we're at with all that with Gabe Davis, but I do think it's notable, obviously, that he's visiting, and it's obviously somebody that the Bills are very familiar with.
Thank you for this, Sal. We'll talk again soon.
All right, you got it.
There's Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, here at 803-0550. Cook, Davis, and many of the other topics swirling around the Bills. How about the Hard Knock series? What do you think? We'll look for your calls again after the update. This is